original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to Question Reality.
Question Reality.
With Priscilla Leona.
Priscilla Leona.
Only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Question Reality. I'm your host, Priscilla Leona, and we are coming to you live from Studio City, California. Our show is broadcast every Sunday from 5 p.m. to 5:50 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Now, if this is your first time tuning in, our show is going to help you if you are questioning your career reality. Now, this show is for you if you were, are, or might be considering a career in the entertainment industry. Our guests will provide you with tips, advice, and resource information on how and what it takes to successfully pursue a career in show business. Our guests work in various professions of entertainment, so that means that we will definitely have someone on the show sooner or later from a career that you are interested. Now, if you want to check out all of our past guests, read their bios, listen to their interview instantly, or download one of the shows, go to the LA Talk Radio website, latalkradio.com. Click on the link at the top of the website that says Channel 1. Scroll down, look at the graphic of our show, Question Reality, and click on that link. And this takes you directly to our archive page, and this is where you can view the list of all of our past guests. And our shows are also available for download on iTunes under the podcast section, and are also available on Stitcher.com. So you just type in Question Reality Radio and we will pop up for your listening pleasure. If you want to find out about our future guests, we're booked all the way until next year. It is next year. Oh my God, I thought we were still in 2012. I'm having a little residual effect from my cough syrup. We are booked all the way until, I think it's until June. I'm not sure, but it's until June. So if you want to check out their guest for from now until then, you want to go to our official Question Reality website. That's questionrealityshow.com. Question Reality, well, it's either one, actually. It's questionrealityshow.com or questionrealityradioshow.com. Either one, you're going to strike gold because we will pop up. Now, as always, we have a fantastic guest for you today. I tell you, this guy is hot and sexy and Italian. What more could we ask for? Hot, sexy, and Italian. We got him here today. I think he's my very first hot, sexy Italian. Yes, I think so. His name is Leo Fadi, and I hope I got that last name right. Leo Fadi, he is a producer, a director, a writer, and an actor. He does it all. And I bet you there are many more things he can do that we're hoping to get out of him today. Now, we're going to ask him lots and lots of questions. He has so much experience and knowledge. So we are hopefully going to get a lot of advice, career advice from him today. Some of the things we're going to be asking him is, how does he do it? What is his secret that lets him move effortlessly between acting, filmmaking, musical theater, improvisation, writing? I mean, this man, from what I understand from my darling Stephen Lucen, from it's his PR rep, he does it all. And we need to find out how he does it. So we also want to know, what are the differences between working in Europe and the United States? I definitely want to know the differences between the producing and the acting, if there are any similarities, major differences. And then we want to know, what are some unique ways to get funding for your indie films, and how do you get distribution for your indie films? So we got a lot of questions to ask him today. But first, before we talk to Leo, I thought we would dedicate just a couple minutes to today, Oscar Day, Oscar, woo, 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 which is going to be starting in 25 minutes, I think, on ABC. And I was just telling Leo earlier that I can't believe that I booked him for Oscar Day. I had to turn down two Oscar parties today, and I am sick over it. But I love my Leo, and Leo and I are going to try to make it a very happy Oscar-like experience for you today. We hope we're going to give you some entertainment, but we can't believe we booked it for today. But here we are. So in celebration of that, I thought that I would give you some Oscar trivia or some Academy trivia facts. So let's start. Now you know that in honor of Oscar, I love to every year have my wonderful film critic on, who unfortunately could not be with us today to give her Oscar predictions. Her name is Betty Jo Tucker, and she's recently had an operation, so she couldn't be with us today. And we wish you the very best, Betty, and hopefully you can be back with us next year. So we're not even going to talk about her predictions without her here. We're going to wait for her next year. So let's talk about some facts. I got two of them. Did you know? My first fact is that during the 29th Academy Awards, now this is also dedicated to because we have an Italian filmmaker with us today, so this is why I'm doing this little fact. Okay, so during the 29th Academy Awards, which took place at my favorite theater, the Pantages Theater in Hollywood, on March 27th, 1957, that the regular competitive category of best foreign language film was introduced. Instead of only being recognized as a special achievement award or as a best picture nominee, as they did in 1938. So that's exciting. And the first winner in this new category was Federico Fellini's La Strada with Anthony Quinn, and a second nomination for Best Original Screenplay. And its win would help to spur an interest in foreign language films, and which it did. And my God, that's one of my favorite things to do is watch foreign films. And another Fellini film, Knights of Cabaria, would win the Best Foreign Language Film Oscar in the following year. And this was fantastic for foreign films, and this is how we got started, and that's the little tribute to our Italian guest today. Oh, and also, this was the first year that all of the five Best Picture nominees were in color. So there you go. 29th Oscars was in color. And one little tiny thing. Someone wrote this in one of our favorite fans, and his name is Steve Lair from Baltimore, Maryland. And he contributed a question. He said, who is the only write-in Oscar winner? And the answer is Hal Moore in 1935 for his cinematography of A Midsummer Night's Dream. And he won without having been nominated, which is no longer possible under Academy rules. And Moore is also only one of a handful of cinematographers to have a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. So there you go. My God, could I give you any more information on Oscar Day? See, you could take this information and use this at your after Oscar party, which I will not be seeing you at. But let's just move on. So, Leo Fati.
Hello.
Are you there?
I'm here and excited. And thank you for this information you're sharing. I'm learning.
Well, there you go. You got two little, in honor of my Italian filmmaker, we've got Federico Fellini.
I know. I'm so excited you mentioned them. Those two movies are one of my favorite movies, and it's so exciting to hear them mentioned here.
Absolutely. We had to honor the Italians today. It's all about Italians.
Yeah.
Now, it's all about Italian. We love those little crazy Italians. Now, Seth, you are Italian-born professional actor, director, creative producer, and you've been here. Well, first of all, I don't know what your title is, but you're associated. I don't know if you're the founder CEO of Seven Waves Entertainment, but that's your Hollywood production company that you've run that, or how are you associated with Seven Waves?
Well, I created the company along with other people, and I'm the executive vice president right now of Seven Waves.
Okay. And I understand that you have several projects underway, including the recent release of the short film Tipping Point, and that's Seven Waves is earning recognition in international film festivals for its unconventional and fearless storytelling. Well, that is the characteristic traits of all Italian men, isn't it? My God.
I hope so.
Oh, Tipping
We're very excited about Tipping Point. It seems to have a lot of be getting a lot of attention all over the world. So it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, it's your first film that you directed, and it was just recently screened at the Sundance Film Festival, right?
No, it didn't go to Sundance. We presented at Universal Studios in Hollywood.
Oh, so tell us about, what is Tipping Point about? Tell us everything we need to know about Tipping Point.
Well, I was lucky enough to have lived in New York City for a couple of years, and I've always been fascinated with that city and how it affects people's lives and energy. And you know, the first time I got there, I thought it was the most awful place in the world. But then after like a week, I was in love, and that energy and that amazing feel that you get when you're in New York and you're on a go and everything moves with you. And so I wanted to make a movie about how this amazing energy affects people's lives. And the story of Tipping Point takes place in one brownstone building where there are six different apartments, and each apartment has its own little story that is basically coming up to a peak in this one night where everything changes because of one little accident that causes everything to change. So it's really, really cool, and I'm excited about it. It's my first film directing credit, and I had a lot of fun.
Now, do you also star in it, or you just direct?
No. For this one, it's a very visual project, and I want it to be behind the camera at all times to kind of really take control of what the picture would look like. And I love working with actors, and I got an amazing, amazing cast. They were all super talented and very different, and I loved working with each and every one of them on getting the right performances for this, because it's a heavy piece acting wise. Everybody was, you know, at the peak of their life situation. So they're all very emotional moments, and I had to get the actors there right away. So I had to be behind the camera at all times, and I actually enjoyed it. It was quite different because, I go in front of the camera and behind the camera and on stage. I'm going to do it all. But for this one, I had to focus and be a director.
Now, with you having only and again, if I say anything that's incorrect, please correct me.
Yeah.
With having previous experience as everything but a director, how did you find the transition? What did you do to prepare yourself to go from, say, actor to director?
Well, I've directed theater shows before, and I've produced web series and short films in the past. I wrote things. So I've seen people work. The only difference, and I've worked as a director, you know, for theater, it's a little different. The only difference was having to decide camera angles and camera shots and really work with the camera that was under my control. And of course, under the control of my DP, which was amazing. David Newberg, he is fabulous. So the main adjustment I had to make is really like think visually and establish exactly the kind of look I wanted for each shot, and then the feel that the lights would give. And it's a lot of like, it's fantastic. Like, it's amazing the amount of control you have on what you shoot in a film. And in theater, it's a little different. It's more about the performance and working with the actors. And of course you get to light design and all that, but it's a whole different process. Also working with the actors was kind of the same as working in theater, except you have to, of course, make the necessary adjustments that a TV or a film actor needs to make because of the camera. But it was a lot of fun. A lot of fun.
Now, with you not having to, and we'll just tell the audience what it is. So what an act, what a director, one of the things that a director has to do is to come up with a shot list. So yeah. With you not having been a director before, how take us through how you learned to do your shot list.
Well,
to set the shots up.
Yeah. It's pretty interesting to see. I work a lot with my actors, and I tend to change things last minute, which my first AD and my DP hated. But I really want to take it from what the actors bring to the table. We had very little rehearsal with the actors, and some things changed on production day. Although I have to say, for this film, I had a very, very specific vision of some shots that I needed to take. So I had to approach storytelling and storyboarding, actually, in a very specific way. So I really had to sit down and visualize where I wanted to put the camera and what shots I needed to get. And so what I did for this one is I really selected the must-get, like what I really wanted to get. I wanted this, you know, super cool dolly shot or all these. We go from apartment to apartment in this building, and we go through walls and above the ceiling, or we go through windows. So it's a lot of, like, really cool shots, and those I really have to plan in advance, because it's not something, again, just bring up and say, hey, by the way, I want to go through a wall. It'd be kind of complicated to figure it out on the spot. So I had to sit down with my DP, and I think the answer to your question is the best way to do something, especially if it's your first time, is to collaborate with somebody. Ask for advice. Never be afraid to say, hey, I actually am not sure about this. Help me. And that's probably where I found my success, especially in creating a shot list, because I, as you said, I've never done it before. I've seen people do it again, because being behind the scene and producing, you kind of have to know what's going on anyway. But now that I have full control, it was pretty different. Again, if I didn't have the amazing team I had right next to me, probably this wouldn't have been so successful.
Yeah, it's one of the things that you kind of need is a storyboard. That's what the DP kind of goes by. And if you don't know how to draw or have somebody do it for you, like I only know how to draw stick figures, so it's just a headache for the DPs to understand what I'm doing. So what I tend to do is I write everything out in complete detail. I'm very retentive. And you can do that. So you can do it either, if you just know how to do stick figures, that's fine. You can do that. Mm-hmm. Or you can write it out, as long as you communicate to the DP what you're doing.
Right.
Both, I would imagine, works fine.
And the first AD.
I say it again?
And the first AD, who's going to have to make a schedule and figure out how to make it happen in one day, or like how many other days you have.
Yeah. Now, with you being a director for the first time, I would imagine you really relied heavily on the first AD. And tell me, what were some of the things that you needed him to do that you found were a priority as a first-time director?
Well, you know, again, I've been on set before many times. And so I kind of wanted to – I knew what to expect. And it was a big relief for me now to actually be directing, because every time I was on set before, I was biting my tongue because I wanted to give some directorial notes, but that wasn't my position, so I couldn't really speak. So for me, this time was, I had this huge feeling of freedom, having to control. I could control anything. Now, what I really asked my crew to do, especially my first AD and people that were working with me as producers, is to take all the scheduling, the technical work away from me as much as possible, so that I could focus on the art, and, you know, as much as possible, because I mean I was involved in producing this as well, so I couldn't really completely get away from the production aspect, but as much as possible, especially if you're wearing different hats. My advice to anybody that is kind of producing, writing, getting things done, which is great, is to find reliable people to delegate to.
Right.
And I was so lucky. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to ask you, you brought a good point up, which was one of my questions a little later, but this is perfect to ask it now. At what point does the producer, for lack of a better word, divorce themselves from the project? At what point do you say, I'm over and done with being a producer, I got to focus on being a director now? Or writer and then director, et cetera. So how do you know when to separate? Because the duties of a producer are continuous throughout the project. Yeah. So when do you know when to let go and focus on the directing part?
Even it's super tricky because if you, I'm going to say it this way, if you have somebody else with you that is going to help you, that is going to keep being a producer, that's the ideal situation, so you can really focus and you're working with the actors. If you have to wear both hats at the same time, it is possible and people do it. But when you're working artistically and you know you're needed for the artistic creation of what you're doing, then the producing, the scheduling, the people worrying about what time lunchtime is or the contracts that are not signed, that has to go. So, you know, when it's time to figure out, when you feel it's time to figure out an artistic, creative aspect of what you're doing, the technicalities of what's going on have to go away. And then, you know, it's 2013 and people are on iPhones and all sorts of like devices. And so our attention likely is now stronger. We can multitask better than we could probably 50 years ago. So what we can achieve now is a little more than what we could before, I guess, in a way. So people that get these things done usually are great multitaskers. But at one point, you know, you have to say, okay, I'm focused. I'm working with this actor right now. Everybody shut up. And you also have to have the power to say, to kind of like get your territory under your control. They have to listen to you. If you lose control, it's a mess. It's a big mess.
It is. It is. Yeah. Now let's go way, way back when Leo Fadi was a little itsy bitsy cute little Italian boy. Now, when you were a child, what did you want to do or be when you grew up? You know how all of us wanted to do or be something. So what did you see yourself doing back then?
It's funny because I've always known I belonged on a stage or creating something, and inside you really know what you're supposed to do. And I knew, you know, I was watching a movie and all of a sudden my brain would go, I was in the movie and I was wearing those costumes and saying those words or animation movies. And I mean, I was one of the characters of any Disney movie you can name. And I totally had that inside me from the get-go. I have to say I had kind of like a weird diversion when I was 18. I was done with high school and all of a sudden people were expecting me to become somebody with a serious job. So, you know, I should have been a lawyer or a doctor or something, a real job, you know. And in Italy especially, that's really important. I mean, they want you to become something that it's not, oh, he just wants to be an actor. That's not considered a very noble profession.
That was my next question. Were your family members and friends supportive of your choice to get into the entertainment? What was that like?
They didn't know better. So for them, they were advising me to go to, you know, to college and get a degree in something useful, not something that they had no idea what it was. So I did law for a year and architecture for a year, and I ran away as soon as I could.
What?
I know, right?
What?
It was fun.
So you actually went to school, got the degrees, did the jobs?
No.
Wow.
It was a year. I just did a year of architecture and a year of law.
Oh, I see.
And I really ran away. It was so funny because I've always been, in my whole life, a really good student. In high school, I was, you know, I had a lot of fun, but I was a really good student. And as soon as I hit those books for law or architecture, I was like, what am I doing here? I really don't care at all for this.
Yes.
So I guess it was a really big call for me to say, okay, you know, I have to follow my heart. And all throughout that time, I was singing and following my passion as a hobby, but it really wasn't enough. So I said, oh, it's time for me to really dedicate myself to what I'm meant to do. And that was the best decision of my life.
I bet your parents lost their minds and threw tons of spaghetti at you as you were walking out the door. Get air. What are you doing? I know. It's difficult when you come from, when you have parents that aren't in the business. They don't even remotely, they think you're going to be poor. You know, my mother's like, oh my God, you're not going to be able to pay your rent. You're going to be eating tuna fish for a month. You're going to have roaches live in a rat infested apartment. Because I'm from Connecticut. Which is right next to New York. So I grew up on the East Coast, so I know exactly, you know, what you're talking about. And it's very difficult trying to convince your parents that you want to pursue entertainment when they think it's a job for lazy people.
Well, they really don't understand it. But I have to say, once I show them how serious I was, they were behind me 100%. It took a little while for them to understand, but as anything, really, like, it's not like I just wanted to become an actor and then I started doing nothing. I studied hard. I started studying hard and participating in anything I could possibly do. I was out 15 hours a day working and doing things. So they saw how serious I was, and that made a difference. And then, you know, they were behind me, and they're fantastic parents.
When you came here 5 years ago, was it difficult for you to break into show business and the jobs that you wanted to pursue? Now, I must say, from speaking with you, I mean, you barely have an accent. I mean, I have friends that have been here for 25, 30 years, and their accent is so thick that I can barely understand them. So, I mean, I thought that you were American. I didn't even barely hear
it. I'm glad. The thing about it, if you, I don't really look Italian, so they wouldn't cast me in The Sopranos or in an Al Pacino, as Al Pacino's son or anything.
Blonde hair, blue eye, right?
Yeah.
So you're hot, super hot Northern Italians, right?
Yeah. So I had to either like lose the accent or change my colors, and it would have been so much work to change my colors consistently, and I didn't want to do that. But
but you work with a dial.
You know,
coach and
I did for a long time. I still do.
Oh, that's fantastic.
I still do. I had multiple coaches.
Mm-hmm. And your look, I mean, you could be cast in so many things. Also a part of a doctor or a lawyer. Which is what you wanted. I said your look is so you have such a great look. You could be cast as a doctor or a lawyer or an architect. Exactly. You could actually be all the things your parents wanted you to be just on television or in the movie.
There you go. I can make them happy anyway.
Exactly. Say, oh, mother, I can do every job you wanted me to do. I will just do it for a shorter time. Now, again, when you came here 5 years ago, was it difficult for you to break into show business and the jobs you wanted to pursue? I mean, did you come here to be an actor and then it blossomed into directing, producing, or tell us about 5 years ago?
Well, I, you know, when I first came here, luckily I was in school, and then school was a great way to kind of get acquainted with the environment and how people think and how people work here. And that was, you know, a great first step into this kind of like showbiz community out here. And I mainly came, you know, I've been singing and acting and kind of doing, having fun like that my whole life. So that was my primary, the primary reason why I came out here. And then as time went by, writer strikes and all that could possibly happen in this business. And it's a slow process. It doesn't happen. And I mean, for some people it does, but it doesn't happen in a heartbeat that you find the perfect job. And so what happened is I, out of frustration, I'm like, okay, well, I'm getting these roles and I'm acting and I'm having fun, but not nearly as much as I would want to, because the roles I would get, you know, a little closer here and there or something like that is not really fully, it didn't really feed my artistic necessity of doing something cool with my art. So I started having all these ideas of things that parts that I would want to act in and stories that I would want to tell. And I started writing. And you know, one thing after the other, I associated with people that had the same kind of like urge to do something, and we created things and we started producing, we started getting other people involved, and this kept growing and growing until Seven Waves Entertainment. So it's pretty cool.
Well, now let's try to help other people.
Yeah.
What tips What tips do you have for other foreigners who want to move here to pursue a career in show business? Tell us about what the greatest tool was that helped you to make a seamless transition. What were some of the things that you need to think about when you move here from a foreign country that you may not know? Or what type of jobs can you get to supplement your income? Just, you know, some basic survival tips.
Yeah, survival is hard because depending on what kind of visa you're on, you have limitations on the kind of work you can do. So if you're on an artistic visa, which most of the people that come here end up having, or if you're a student visa, you can't work. If you're an artistic visa, then you're limited to do work that's related to your profession. So it's not like you can come here on an artistic, an acting visa and be a waiter. It's illegal. So that there are limitations to what you can do. But on the other hand, you can always associate with production companies and acting coaches and people that are the work in the business and seek jobs to support yourself there.
I never even heard of an artistic visa. I love that because I never heard of that. Now that's something I'm going to look up. Is that something offered by every country, or is that something just for Italy or Europe?
No. It's from the United States. So you apply and you request this visa that allows you to work.
You can work in the entertainment industry as long as it's something.
Yeah.
So you could be a painter, though? It could be an artist, like a painter or a sculptor, or is that just for the entertainment industry?
It depends. So they have these visas for every category, but then you're like, if I apply as a sculptor or a painter, that's my job. That's what I'm allowed to do in the States.
Oh.
If I'm applying as an actor, that's what I'm applying to do in the States.
Okay,
that's the limitation.
But what do you do to supplement your income while you're looking for a job as an actor? You're not allowed to do, like, be a waiter or bartender?
No.
Well, how do they expect you to earn a living? They don't care, really?
No, they do. The thing about it, to get the visa, you have to prove that you have work as an actor pending so that you kind of, like, have it coming.
Somebody here's got to offer you a job as an actor in their project.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then they only allow you to stay here for a certain time. Is it like a 6-month visa or something like
Usually
that?
Usually it's a year.
Okay.
Yeah.
Unless you get further work, and then you can extend it and extend it.
Exactly.
I see. So what's your advice for people who come here on an artistic visa, but how will they survive financially? I mean, if they come here with money, great. But if they don't, what kind of jobs can they get? Really, they can't get any jobs, huh?
They can really get any.
Just the acting.
Tough for them. Yeah.
Wow.
They have to find something that's related to.
You better save a lot before you come here then.
Yeah.
Well, at least
tough.
Get through the year, huh?
Yeah. Well, you know, there are acting, you know, hopefully you if you get the visa, it means you have something going on, which will help you a little. And there are jobs that are related to acting that you could apply and get away with. Like, if you're involved in a project, make yourself available to do more, not just act, so that people would, you know, will bring you on as to help with production or.
Oh, good. So you can do production work. It doesn't have to be an actor. You could be a production.
You have to work it out with the lawyer. You have to work it out with your lawyer so that they specify that that's also your area of expertise, so that you're allowed to. You kind of broadened up. But when I was on my working visa, I made sure to apply as a performer, not an actor, so that I could sing. The way I worded the legality of the visa was broader than just being an actor, because that helped me. Yeah.
Excellent.
So the more you can, you can make it wider, the better.
So list yourself as a performer, people, a performer.
Yeah.
That way you can be a singer, an actor, a dancer, and you can get all kinds of jobs, a singing hot dog. You can, do singing telegrams. You can do background work. That is great.
There are so many restaurants now that they hire singers, waiters.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So I had a couple of people that actually got that job as a as a side job to kind of like help with financially with them staying here. But that counted as a performing job, even though it was a waiting job, because they were singing.
Yeah, Michelli's is one of the...
Yeah, Michelli's. I love that thing.
Michelli's, yeah. Oh, that's a great tip. Oh, my God. I'm so excited about that tip. Yay. Now, what do you think are three characteristic traits that are absolutely mandatory if you are going to survive in the entertainment industry? Because you cannot be shy. You can't be, you know, like a shy person afraid to approach someone, because networking is so very important. So what are three characteristic traits that you personally feel are mandatory to survive?
Well, you have to love it. You have to be passionate about what you do, because there is a lot of rejection. There is a lot of it just doesn't happen the way you think it's going to happen. And the process is longer than you think. So you have to be focused and passionate and know that you're here to do this no matter what. And people that, you know, they quit along the way. It's because they somehow lose it. They don't do what they want to do and they lose it. So passion, I think, is the number one quality that somebody should have to just make it here and then be able to live here and be happy. Because, I mean, you could stay here and pursue it forever and be unhappy, but that's, I guess, not something that you should want anyway.
Right.
I would say a great amount of networking skills.
Mm-hmm.
But not just, you know, the networking sounds so
you gotta
fake
do
not,
these,
not,
yeah, you got to do these meet and greets. It's not just about the art. I run into so many actors, God bless them. They say it's all about the art and the craft. Oh. Well, you know what? It is, but who the hell's going to hire you if they don't know who you are?
They don't know who you are.
You got to get out there. You got to schmooze. Yeah. If you're an actor, act like you can network. Get your ass out there and act like you're networking if you're that great.
Right. And it's actually
it's your
fun.
Ass party, right?
Yeah.
Act like you're doing a scene.
Exactly. But, you know, like if you want to bring it down to for it to be a quality of somebody that would need, I think curiosity will fall in the same range, because you have to be curious of what other people are doing here, because they could hire you. They could have a project that you could help with. They could, something could, that you don't know, but you say, I'm not a good networker. I don't want to network. Well, you're not curious. You're not curious to see what that person is doing now. And it's not just like just because you could get something back. It's like just, you know, it's good to connect with other human beings. This is a very lonely town if you don't force yourself to connect. Yeah. I worked for a little while with, and I'm still like always in touch with her, with Dallas Travers. She's a marketing advisor for actors. I don't know if you know her. And her suggestion on networking is to focus on one person at a time, because it can become overwhelming when you're at a party and you think, hey, I got to network, I got to get business cards, I got to give my business cards out, and you're there like trying to reach out to so many people and you end up like not even knowing who you are at the end of the night. But if you kind of like are curious about one person and you try to kind of connect with one person per event, you'll find it much easier to even meet more than one at the end of the night, and it's going to feel way more organic. And Dallas is amazing in giving these kinds of advice. So,
and it's going to be much, it's going to also make you appear much more genuine and not like talking to one person in your eyes. Have you ever talked to some people at these parties? And this is one of my pet peeves, when you're talking to someone and their eyes are scanning the room to see who they're. Are you so tacky? What are you doing? And that right away turns me off. I don't even want to talk to you anymore. It's like, bye, see you. And you know, you got to remember not to do that. If you're a person that is doing that, don't do it, because people are going to notice and you're going to get blown off.
Exactly. When they leave with their business card.
Oh my God.
Oh my God. And I'm like, really? Nice to meet you too. I don't know who you are.
Yeah, that's a great tip that you gave. Focus on one person. I'm telling you.
And I have to say.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I have to say, like, I was, as everybody, a little resistant to the networking idea, because it again, has this weird feeling of being not organic.
It does.
But as I forced myself to, and I followed Dallas's advice to just, you know, learn to be curious about people And this is like, we're actors. We should be curious about people anyway. We're directors, writers. We want to tell stories about people. So we have to be curious about people. As I force myself to go out and find out what people are up to, what are they passionate about? What you learn from people, it's so, you get so addicted to just like learning from people that it's not, it doesn't feel like networking anymore. As soon as like, before you even find out, you have friends that you never thought you could have just because you get curious about other people about you. And it's just really great. And it's not networking, it's connecting.
Yeah.
Let's call it connecting.
And you also find out how many friends that you have mutually when,
right.
Which is quite amazing. Now,
yeah.
What do you feel are the secrets to working as a team on a production and keeping everybody happy and enthusiastic about the project, which is so important? Because, you know, there's a lot of times, you know, actors don't click or actors are fighting with this one or it can be a mess. So what do you feel as a director or a producer, what are the secrets for working as a team on a production, keeping everybody happy, keeping them enthusiastic about the project so they don't get bored and, you know, lackluster?
I'm going to give you two answers. One as a director and one as a producer, because they're different,
okay.
I feel. As a director, you have to have a very strong connection with each actor, and each relationship with each actor has to be unique to what they are as an actor. On Tipping Point, I worked with 12 actors, and I swear to God, they were all amazing, and I swear to God, they were all completely different. And they approached their art in a completely different way. They would take directions in a completely different way. And I had to really fast establish a relationship with them in a way of communicating so that they feel satisfied. They feel they're getting what they need to do their best job. And so they won't be divas. They're on board with you. So you have to have the strong connection and unique. You have to listen to the way they communicate and give it back to them, because it's your job to maintain the whole thing going artistically the right way. As a producer, everybody on the production, actors, PAs, first ADs, they will come to you with a complaint. They will come to you screaming about something, afraid that everything is falling apart, everything is going bad, and you get everything on
it's
you.
It's true.
You have to, yeah.
I can't work with her. I can't. Yeah.
So you have to keep positive, because you get all the negative directly to you at every single moment. So you have to keep positive. Listen, but not listen. You know, you have to listen and show that you're listening, but you have to know the reality. The reality is this person is freaking out because of this. I'm in control. So I think that's the real key, because you'll get, as a producer, you'll get everything. You're the person that gets all the, I don't want to say what.
Yeah, you do. And it's a very fine balance, because some people's producers' natural inclination is to agree with them, to shut them up. But then if you do that, you're going to find that you're in a position where you might be gossiping about other, you know, the actors or the director. So you're very careful that you don't say, you know what, I know she's very difficult, but because that has taken you down the path to gossiping, and that is not a good position for a producer, and you really
don't
need to be in Switzerland. So how do you stop yourself from doing that?
I'm gossiping with one person another?
Yeah, because you know they're going to come to you and talk to you about this person's not this and that and that. How do you, you know, what do you do to stop yourself from agreeing and becoming part of the gossip with them?
It's a hard balance, because you have to listen anyway, to a certain degree. Some people will go too far, and you have to stop them, but to a certain degree you have to listen. And then you say, oh, well, I'm taking in consideration what you're saying. I'm in control, and I'll take care of it if it's necessary. And, you know, people, even if inside you're dying and you're freaking out, you can never show it. You have to keep in control at all. As a producer, keep in control at all times. I was shooting Tipping Point, and we had a huge delay. Our art department, which was great, but they had a little couple of issues. We were building sets, so we had a huge delay. And the DP comes to me freaking out, saying, we're not going to make it. This is impossible. It's not going to happen. And inside, I had the same exact fear. This is not going to happen. I'm freaking out. But, you know, I had to pull it together and say, you know what, everything is going to be fine. I'm taking care of it. I'm taking care of it. Then you go in the bathroom and cry.
Yeah.
But,
right. Never let them see you cry, but you can go cry in the bathroom. Oh, exactly.
Yeah.
Now, what are some unique, as a producer, what are some unique ways? We know typical ways. What are some unique ways that you use to get funding for your indie films, or that you found other people to do? Some ways for our people who are trying to get some funding, maybe some tips for them.
It depends on the stage of your career. If this is your first time, I suggest to ask for favors. You reach a point where in your career you can't do that anymore, because people are not going to take you seriously if, like, it's your third project and you're still asking for somebody to work for free. But if this is the first thing you're doing, you want to do a little short film or something that is going to kickstart your career as a producer, I think you have to reach out to your community and say, hey, here's what I'm doing. I don't have money for this, but I believe in the idea and I want you to be a part of it. What could you bring to the table? And that's the first step. As you get along, as you go on with your career and your body of work is a little bigger and, you know, you're growing, there are so many ways to kind of like find people to invest and to help you. Looking for private investors at an early stage is really the best bet, to find somebody that would have something to gain from what you're doing. Let's say you can do a little product placement in your web series and showcase maybe a restaurant or something that wants the exposure, and you have a little bit of a following online, so you want to pull it out of the way. Also, one thing to do is to make sure that, you know, your online life is active, so that people that could donate a little money are interested in doing so, so they could get something back, you know, as far as visibility and that, everything that goes with that. Kickstarter is a great website. Indiegogo, those are crowdfunding websites. I'm sure you're familiar with them.
Mm-hmm.
But they're great. I feel like
Both of them? And if so, which one?
I'm about to.
Oh, never used them? Because one of them, I'm not going to say which one, but one of them, which breaks my heart, you can say, for example, your projected budget is $100,000, and you give it a target date of such and such. One of these websites, you may get $199,000, and if you don't make that $1, which would be crazy because why wouldn't you just give it $1? But I'm just saying, if you don't get it by that date, you don't get any of that money. The other one, the other website, the funding website, you get all of the money. So I would choose the one where you got all of the money instead of the one where you didn't. But people still choose that one, and I don't know why, but whatever.
It has more credibility. That's why.
It has more credibility. That's right. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
In a way, if you're on that one, I'm not going to say it if you want to.
Yeah, let's not say.
Yeah. But if you're on that one, it feels like your project has a little more credibility, and their acceptance process for their projects is a little more selective in a way. So it's a little more, a little higher level, apparently. But now, even the other one, it's the same as good. And yes, you're right. You get the money no matter what. So that's good. And it's a great way to raise money, especially if you're smart with your social media, especially if you're smart with your Facebook and Twitter, especially if you, if you organize. You know what I did for Love Triangle, my previous short film, I put together an amazing party. Very cheap. I didn't have to spend a lot of money, I swear to God. But again, you associate with people, you ask around, you share your goal, you tell them what you're up to, people will join you. There seems to be a lot happening in this town, not really. People are waiting to participate in things. So really, my biggest advice to people is share your goal. Say what you're doing. Tell people, hey, I'm doing this. I need this. Could you help? Can you help? Do you know somebody that can help? But you don't have to sound needy. It's just like your enthusiasm of knowing what you're doing. So I did this party. Next thing you know, all these people were tweeting about the party, were Facebooking about the party. I presented my film. I involved comedians. I expanded my area of interest of other people. I got people on board with me, which is, you know, what Seven Ways is all about now.
Absolutely. There are so many different ways to do it. And can you believe, Leo, that it is 5 the show. I know. I knew. Didn't I tell you it was going to go fast? It goes so fast.
I can talk to you forever.
I know. I can talk to you, too. I've got like 22 more questions that I didn't get to ask you. But real quick before our minute is over, what do you got coming up real quick? Let's get it out there.
It's called Extravaganza. It's an episodic series that is connected to a live show. So we're shooting the episodes, and we're also having it. The episodes are about a live show that's happening, but we're also actually doing the live show for real. So we're going cross media.
Oh, and
yeah.
How can we find out about that? Is there a website or where do we go?
7-wave.com.
7-waves.com.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's 7-waves.com, and you'll see all the information about our company, what we're about, our projects, our past projects, our coming up projects, all our social media links, and everything you could possibly want to know about 7 Waves is on that website. And we're always, I have to say this before we get off, always looking to connect with people with ideas, people that want to do something, people that don't know how to make it happen but have a great idea. Send us an email. We're here to listen. We're here to connect.
So you accept all projects, no matter what it is. So comedy, drama.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Feature films, short films.
Yes.
So just send you an email, and they'll send you the script. And then you never know. It could be produced by 7waves.com. Hell, I might send my shit over there, even though I don't have any.
Please do.
But I'm waiting to get some.
Please do if you have something you're working on. Like, again, we're all about connecting.
I got tons of friends that are writers, so I might have some good stuff to send over you. I'll tell them to connect with you. Well, thank you. My God, I thank Stephen Lucen for referring you. He is your PR rep, is he not?
Yeah. Yes, he is.
He's
taking care of Intercontinental Style.
Thank you so much. Leo, you have to come back on because I didn't get through the 22 questions. So you got to promise you're going to come back on either later this year or next year.
Absolutely. I can't wait.
All right. So make sure you we're Facebook friends. Make sure you invite me to any of your upcoming functions, and I'll do the same because I got to meet you in person.
Yes, that'll be great. Absolutely. We'll be in touch.
Say goodbye to all of your fans, Leo.
Goodbye, everybody. Be in touch. Be in touch with us.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. Leo Foddy, 7-waves.com. Happy Oscar Day. Bye.
Happy Oscar Day. Bye.
You're listening to Question Reality.
Question Reality.
With Priscilla Leona.
Priscilla Leona.
Only on LA Talk Radio.